This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day. As we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information, presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, and we cover lots of topics, and today another look at the governor's race. Republican candidate for governor, Christine Drazen, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Hey, always good to be here.
So, your race seems to have a lot of momentum right now. Do you feel any level of concern about the fact that that momentum is maybe picking up a little too fast versus how far away the November general election is?
You know, I absolutely never turn down a good report and good progress. Doesn't matter when it happens, we're going to continue to build on it to the point that we win on November the 3rd. So no, I think it's exciting. I think Oregonians are viewing this as a very real opportunity for them to make a difference in the future of their state. It's all upside, no downside.
Now, the governor recently, last few days, got a large campaign contribution, one of the, I think, Democratic Governors Association, something like that. Where do the two of you stack up when it comes to campaign funds?
You know, she did not have a primary, and I did. So she's raised a little bit more than me, but the larger issue is that I spent quite a bit in that really hotly contested Republican primary because, you know, we just had such a terrific range of folks that wanted to be a part of serving our state out of the governor's office, that to communicate with Republican voters that took up some of those campaign funds. And now that we're on the general election, we're working really hard to catch up. And I have, over the course of this campaign, since I filed, I think I've raised a little bit less than $6 million, but I've got a ways to go to catch up with Tina, who has been amassing her war chest, you know, since she got into office almost four years ago. And so, yeah, it's an uphill climb, and I'm committed to getting it done, but we got a ways to go.
It's got to be a struggle to be at this level, maybe for some people, because the reality is you've got to raise the funds to be able to put out an effective campaign. Whereas your job in life is not normally a professional fundraiser.
Yeah. There's not very many people that actually have that as a day job. And so, yeah, it's definitely the part of the campaign that's the most foreign, and it's tough, but it really is an investment in our state. If we want to get this done, I have to be able to compete. I have to have commercials, and I have to be able to send people mail, and I have to be able to send emails and communicate, and that every bit of that takes resources. And to have a really strong campaign team, you know, you need to pay people and for their efforts and their time, and they need to be able to pay the rent and the mortgage. And so, yeah, running a campaign and a statewide effort at this level is very expensive. But it to not hit those standards and not compete financially means that at the end of the campaign, she's going to be the only one out there potentially with a message, and we can't let that happen. We have to fight for hearts and minds, and I have to be able to compete financially to do that.
Now, the summertime is really when you're probably working extra hard to bolster those campaign coffers, right?
But yeah, we have lots of events and lots of conversations and just introducing myself to folks and sharing my vision, which is we want Oregon to be the best state in the nation to be able to live. And this should be the best state in the nation for you to be able to start a business and grow a business and raise your family and get a world-class education for those kids. And it isn't that unless we get change. And those are the conversations we're having is what do you hope for your future, for your businesses and your families? And do you believe that you need change to get that done? And it really is just aligning with folks out there that care about the future of our state and have the ability to be able to be a part of turning it around. I am so grateful for, you know, we've had 5,000 plus people that have gone online and given anywhere from $5 to a couple hundred dollars. And that fuels our campaign. And then we have people that have the ability to give a little bit more, and that helps us hit some of these really big goals that we have. But it really is a grassroots movement that fuels this, and anybody that contributes to the campaign is somebody that's going to vote for change, and I'm incredibly grateful for that.
Now, I think in the last couple of days, I only caught a little bit about this, something about a Democrats for Drazen group. What can you say about that?
Well, we're fighting for hearts and minds, and not surprisingly, across the state, nobody's happy with the status quo. And I am running to serve Oregonians regardless of party. I'm running to make this the best state in the nation, no matter who you are, whether you vote for me or not. And so we had an event up in Portland, and it was a conversation with Democrats that aren't satisfied with the status quo and don't want to see people dying on their streets and can't afford to pay for the higher cost of living up in Portland. And they wanted to have a conversation about what kind of change I'd bring. And I'm excited that, you know, we filled the venue and had a conversation with people that are open to change.
And that's got to be, not unheard of, but a bit on the unusual side.
No, it shouldn't be. I mean, we had to pull this off. We need people across this entire state to see that there is something in it for them, that change serves their families, that if you can afford to pay for your groceries and if you can afford to pay for your utilities because the state is lowering costs and getting out of the way, and if you have a great job and opportunity for a promotion because the state isn't strangling out those job creators and those businesses and forcing them to move to another place, that's good for everybody. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a campaign that is here to serve the people of the state and improve the quality of life for all of us.
So what would you say your main themes are in this campaign?
You know, it's going to be a conversation about affordability. When I say I want to make this the best state in the nation to live, I mean, I want you to be able to afford to live here. Those taxes that you're paying, you should know that you're getting a value for the taxes that you're paying. You should know that you're getting a return on that investment, which means that when you call 911, that the police come. When you're driving down your roads, that those roads are well-maintained, that when your kids get on a bus and go to school, that they're not going to be indoctrinated, they're going to be educated, that you can expect that your kid's diploma is going to have standards behind it, and that diploma is going to mean something when they go out in the world. They're going to be proficient. That people that are struggling with addiction, that we get them help, that they get into recovery, and that we are not going to allow people to just live here as a decision to come here for our tourist economy to support and homeless in terms of homelessness and addiction, that's not going to be our culture anymore in our state, that we will give help to the people that want help, but the people that are here because we're a tourist destination, we're giving away free drug paraphernalia, anything that's enabling addiction, we've got to stop paying for it. We need to recognize that people living on our streets, that it's cruel and not compassionate to just sit there and watch them slowly die in front of us. And that's what's happening today.
Now, there was,
so we're going to talk about all those things.
There was an attempt to get a ballot measure that was pretty broad ranging regarding hunting and agriculture and a lot of related things that didn't make the ballot. I understand you've got something to say about that in a presentation coming up here soon.
Yeah, I'm actually on my way to a press conference right now to share our latest proposal around that. And I'll just give you a little bit of a preview. I had listened to a podcast from the chief petitioner for IP28, and he was brazen about the fact that he wants to bring this ban on hunting and fishing and ranching and farming and pest management, that he wants to bring that to Oregon's ballot year after year after year until he gets it passed. I don't think that Oregonians should have to go through that. I don't think that they should have that put at risk every 2 years just because there's some extremist out there that's willing to spend his time that way. So I'm announcing today that I will have a constitutional referral that we will send through the legislative branch to put on the ballot an opportunity to protect access to hunting and fishing and ranching in the state of Oregon, so that we don't see extremist initiative petitions every single election cycle that could not just put businesses at risk, but drive up the price of food, across our state, but certainly also take away our heritage and our cultural freedoms as well. We can't have that happen. It's outrageous. It's extreme. And there's really no reason that we should entertain that. And so now that it has not made the ballot, this is the right time to move that issue through the legislative process in 2027, get that on the ballot so that Oregonians can protect their rights.
A lot of things to cover. State Senator Christine Drazen on Inside Douglas County joining us this afternoon. Right now, we've got record fire acreage having burned in the state. What's your assessment of the firefighting effort that's going on?
You know, it has been a complex year, and we have really, really fantastic firefighting teams in Oregon right now. We have local crews that are extraordinary. And we have a coordinated system that, you know, brings all of it to bear to fight fires. But this year we had some glitches in our process. And it comes down to this requirement, and it's an appropriate requirement, that we have people with a certain skill level that can supervise others. And we had a missing piece of our workforce where we had enough, you know, bulldozers and water tenders and hand crews, but we didn't have enough people to supervise them. And so it slowed down our ability to get people on those fires quickly. And that was a problem this year. They ended up bringing people up from, you know, I believe New Zealand and Australia. More than 100 folks literally had to cross an ocean to come and help provide that level of management expertise in the fires that are raging across Oregon right now. And that's wrong. The governor declared an emergency around fire season all the way back in June. That was her opportunity and her moment to prepare and get folks organized and ready so that we would have the people here on the ground when we needed them. And she did not do that advance work. And her opportunity to pre-position resources, she didn't do that. There were a lot of failures, and it is not an indication of the exceptional teams that we've got here. Our firefighters are risking life and limb to save life and property, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. But from a leadership perspective, we all saw this season coming, not to the extent that we've experienced it, but we knew it was going to be a rough one, and it has been. And to have that level of gaps in our coordinated response is a real problem, and we've got to address it.
Another aspect of that, as governor, what would you do differently to look at how state forests are managed?
Well, first of all, let's not jump off the federal forest too quickly. The fires that are raging in Oregon right now, we've got over 30 fires raging, and the vast majority are on federal forest land. It's time for the lawsuits to stop and for the management of our federal forests to begin. We have got to treat these forests like they're an asset, not a liability. We're spending about $150 million so far on forest fires in the state of Oregon on the state side. Our net costs are going to be about $100 million of that. And we have got to recognize that we should instead be spending the vast majority of that money on mitigation so we don't face these kinds of fires every couple of years. We had an extreme fire season in 2024 that was a lot of ranch land. This year, it's a lot of forest land. But year after year, we can't say, hey, there's 2 million acres of land on fire in the state of Oregon. We've got to manage our forests differently. And the federal administration has indicated a real openness to this. And we need to have them in there partnering. We need to have them in there, treating and thinning and managing these forests to the benefit of our communities and certainly to the benefit of our air quality. On the state side, we have got, you know, an approach on state fires where we put those fires out. We don't let them burn. We put the fires on state forests out. And we need to continue to have a strong system that allows for us to do that. But on the state side, we also need to recognize that these are resources that we should manage to the benefit of our state. This is money that goes to our schools, and we need to continue to actively manage our state forests as well. There's room for progress on all of it. We had 5 big state fires on our lands this year, 30 all in on state lands, I believe. I mean, 30 all in across all landscapes, and only 5 of those were big fires on state forest lands. And so, you know, we tend to put those fires out as quickly as we possibly can. Initial attack in Oregon is strong. So we have systems in place, but what we need to do is more mitigation, more resilience on the landscape, and we need to treat those forests, whether they're state or federal, like it's an asset and not a liability. Right now, we actually import more logs into Oregon from Canada to build our housing supply and to feed our economy. We need to be producing those logs from Oregon's forests and managing our forests within our exceptional Oregon Forest Practices Act and all those things. Like, we know how to do this. We know how to balance out our environmental commitments and the need to be able to manage these forests more effectively. That's going to take leadership to get that done. But the people that are out there, you know, working in our forests every single day can be trusted to do that.
If you look ahead to January, presuming a victory, talk about your first 30 days. What would you do once you jumped into the governor's seat in Salem?
Yeah, I'm going to tear up executive orders in the governor's office on day one. So right now she's got something called the Climate Protection Plan that really is just a giveaway to her friends. It's really a activist, political, nonprofit giveaway fund. And we can't afford that in our economy. And frankly, it's the wrong public policy approach in the first place. So I'm going to tear up the Climate Protection Plan, and the other climate initiatives are driving up costs across our state because we don't have any choice. And when we're talking about my number one priority is affordability on behalf of Oregonians, we cannot have a heavy-handed political agenda that doesn't actually benefit the climate, but burdens Oregonians continue to be advanced through the executive branch. So I'm going to do away with that on day one. I'm going to audit government spending across the board, but in particular around homelessness and addiction services. I think it's very important that people recognize we're spending an awful lot of money in that category. It's time that they get some results. And I'm going to fire ineffective agency heads. We have got to have a culture shift on the state level. Government is not here to be heavy-handed and oppositional to the businesses that hire people and work in our state. We need to work with them, not against them. We can solve problems in that way. We can expedite permitting. I'm going to reduce the regulatory burden because we know that Oregon has a heavier regulatory burden on our businesses and, frankly, individuals in our state than almost anywhere else in the nation. And those will all make a big difference in what it feels like to live here in the state, and certainly to tell businesses, thank you for staying. Please don't leave us for Arizona, Idaho, Nevada. Like, please stay. We want you to stay. What will it take for you to grow here? It's time for the job losses to stop. And between 2024 and 2025, we saw 25,000 jobs lost. We had record bankruptcies. 10,000 of those jobs were in manufacturing alone. Those are high-wage, good jobs. It's time for Oregon to stop our war on work. We need to recognize that for families to be stable, for our economy to provide that base support for our most vulnerable citizens, we need a viable economy. We need jobs. We need businesses here. And I am going to be a governor that says Oregon is open for business. Let's get this done together. And frankly, all along that time, the part of that that's really going to help families is increased housing supply and lower costs at the pump and for your utilities, where the state backs away from some of these misguided policies that have been driving up costs that Oregonians just can't afford anymore.
What about your priorities for the next legislative session if you're elected?
Well, you know, we have got to amend the corporate activities tax. I know most people don't even know what that is, but Oregon happens to have a sales tax. They just don't pay it at retail. So they're not paying it on their coffee when they, you know, pop into their favorite coffee shop. But the businesses across our state that do business within Oregon's borders are paying a corporate activities tax that stacks. And it absolutely drives up costs for us. And we actually don't see the benefit in our schools. Only half of the money from that goes directly to payments through our block grants to schools. The rest of it is, frankly, set asides for grants that not all schools receive. And so we aren't seeing the upside for our classrooms for improvement in student outcomes, but we are seeing the downside in cost of living for Oregonians. So I'm going to work with the legislature to have a conversation about how can we improve affordability and get our economy going again. I mean, frankly, Governor Tina Kotek had an election year gimmick with the Prosperity Council, but not everything in that proposal was bad. We're talking about well-intentioned business leaders across our state that came together and made some recommendations that the governor should act on immediately, and she's chosen not to. I will listen to some of those recommendations, and I will, you know, reorganize Business Oregon to get real focused on traded sector economy, and with making every effort to grow our economy from every category. And we have to get serious about it, and we have to work with businesses to see that happen. There is a blueprint out there, and I will work with the legislature, no matter who is serving, to do everything I can to lower the cost of living here and grow our economy.
As you're out campaigning this summer, what are some of the things you hear frequently, no matter what part of the state you're in, from people?
Everybody just wants to see results from the taxes that they're paying, no matter where I go. The most common thing that people will say is, well, where'd the money go? And I think that is so incredibly important, that government is accountable to Oregonians for what we're telling them that we're going to achieve on their behalf. We need to actually deliver, or we need to be accountable for what happens and what changes are going to be made to ensure that we actually deliver for the tax dollars that we're receiving. And if there is not a return on that investment for Oregonians, we need to lower those taxes so that Oregon families can prioritize their own spending and their own families and their own savings and their own retirement. It cannot be the government looking out for its own while families are struggling.
Less than a minute left on Inside Douglas County. Your primary opponents have said they will support you. How active do you see them, or do you want them to be out campaigning for you?
You know, I'm incredibly grateful that on the other side of that, really kind of hard-fought primary, that those good-hearted Oregonians made the decision to recognize that we just have to fire Tina Kotek together. And this race is going to be won or lost based on a movement. It's not possible unless we all come together. And my opponents in that primary recognize that, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. So as we progress through, you know, into the fall for this campaign season, folks are going to see more and more of the other Oregonians out there that ran for governor throughout this campaign at events and as surrogates at events in our community, and I'm grateful for that.
All right. State Senator Christine Drazen, Republican candidate for governor, thanks for being on today.
Thank you so much, Kyle.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This has been Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. It's presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.